This is the Big K Morning Show. I'm Larry Richard with our anchorman, Paul Rasmussen, and we welcome Jim Link, who is the Chief Human Resources Officer for Shurn. And he's joining us via video, and you can see him on our stream, kdkradio.com. Jim, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Larry. Thanks for allowing me the privilege to be here today.
Yeah, we've been anxious to talk to you. So tell us what Shurn does before we ask you the multi-million dollar question.
Yeah, it's SHRM, and we are the Society for Human Resource Management, and we represent human resource professionals around the world to the tune of about 340,000 of us.
So you get a lot of feedback about workplace issues, right?
We do. We get a lot of feedback. We research those issues, and we talk to people about what they can actively do in the world of workers and the workplace across the globe.
All right. Now, the big question is about handling politics in a workplace. No doubt this is create because the country's basically divided straight down the middle, give or take a point or two, and we'll find out where that leads us in the next couple of weeks. But in the meantime, what is the feedback that you're receiving about dealing with politics at work?
Yeah, I think the most impressive feedback is actually in the numbers. So we survey quarterly, talk to people about what we call civility in the workplace. And civility, of course, takes many forms. As it relates to politics in particular, 80% of those surveyed of U.S. workers report experiencing or witnessing poor treatment, because of their political opinions in their everyday lives. Now, that's 80%. That's a staggering number, but that really pales in comparison to the 201 million acts of incivility that are reported every day in the workplace. That's the American workplace, of course. And that leads to perhaps as high as $1.2 billion in lost productivity per day. Staggering, scary numbers for those of us who are involved in the world of work on a daily basis.
Boy, if you're a manager or somebody that's running a company, this is of great concern. And then what do you do about it?
Yeah, there are a couple things you can do. I think first, establishing civility as a requirement in the workplace is certainly a fantastic beginning step. And what we actually encourage here at SHRM is dialogue. What seems to happen now is this polarization that you started off talking about, Larry, appears to be growing rather than diminishing. And we believe that the way to do that, whether it's in the workplace or in society more broadly, is certainly to encourage civil discourse and dialogue on a daily basis. There are ways you can do that, of course, but employees are looking at managers as role models to ensure they are the ones that are setting the tone and the tenor in any workplace around civility, and then, of course, down to the things we're talking about, which is political discourse and regard for all in the workplace.
Jim, Paul Rasmussen here. I'm curious to know what you advise a company, a human resource manager, how to handle conflict like this and when it does come up.
Yeah, the first thing to do is to really understand what is actually going on and the source of that issue. Is it a political issue? Is it a personal issue? Whatever it is that might exist in that particular workplace, a manager and an effective human resources team needs to understand the root cause. Once you understand the root cause of that issue, you can then lay out what the action steps are to resolve it. For many people, it's usually an error of communication. We, for example, found in our surveying and in our results that 70% of people told us that they had witnessed an act of incivility in the workplace within the last month, right? That's a huge number. And so what is that act of incivility? Well, we asked that question and we found out that it was things as simple as poor communication or someone didn't like the tone in an email, all the way down to acts of physical violence. Now, fortunately, those acts of physical violence were certainly less than the ones reported from the email altercations, but certainly getting to the root cause of those things is the first step. The second step is then coming to a resolution. And that's the hardest part. If you're a manager or a leader in an organization, you gave up trying to make everybody happy a long time ago. So what you're trying to do then is to establish the best fair outcome for all parties involved. And those things happen, Paul, on a case-by-case basis.
Outside of politics, we're with Jim Link, who is Chief Human Resources Officer for SHRM. Outside of politics, what is the number one issue that people seem to be dealing with at work?
You know, it's the relationship that's tied to with their manager or their boss or their leader. When we look at the issues that surface, many of them are driven simply by communication or lack thereof. People just aren't talking to each other the way that they used to in workplaces. They're relying on social media. They're looking at digital outcomes. They think that everyone texts or that everyone talks face to face. So there's this great polarization even around the way that we communicate and talk to each other. Again, the best way to solve that is by setting the expectations and the standards for what effective communication looks like in an organization, and then holding everyone accountable to ensuring they deliver upon that.
Job security for you, Jim. And then after the election,
all day long,
I'm curious, after the election, if we see, you know, there'll be some residual effect either way, because one side or the other is going to be extremely disappointed. And then as that, you know, settles in, it's going to take some time, though, don't you think?
It absolutely will. And here at SHRM, we're already thinking about what happens next. Right. So when we look at whichever administration, you know, comes into the White House, the best way to think about this is that we will need to be prepared to deal with the outcomes of the decisions that are made by that particular administration. The most effective way to do that is by planning and being prepared now to think about those outcomes. Business leaders are already thinking long and hard about how they will need to adjust or advise or shift whatever position they have. But at the end of the day, it's very, very important to realize that people who are working in your organization are still going to be working there. They're still going to have expectations, and they're going to be relying upon their managers and leaders to set the right tone of civility in that particular workplace.
Jim, for a word of advice to the people who are listening or just workaday people like me, what advice do you have about dealing with this stuff as we go through the day?
Yeah, the best advice I have is to really acknowledge and understand another human being's point of view. We today, are because of this polarization, are certainly finding ourselves focused on only one side of a discussion, a conversation, or an argument. There's nothing wrong with asking another human being, a worker, a colleague, a friend, to explain, to acknowledge their position and their point of view. There's nothing wrong with re-engaging people to learn from them, to actually get something from another person's perspective. We seem to have lost that art and that consideration in the workplace today. And I think it's time we revive that and bring it back to life in the workplace as an expectation of how we'll function both in that workplace and, in my view, more broadly in our society.
Jim, appreciate your time this morning. Great discussion and information, and I hope for some people it helps. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Jim Link, Chief Human Resources Officer for SHRM on the Big K Morning Show. Presented by Subaru, is back this Saturday at Rockwell Park in the East End. Event runs from 9:30 to 4. Bring your four-legged friends to meet vendors, participate in costume contests, even get photos with Santa. Stop by any Subaru dealer for complimentary tickets. For details, go to kdkradio.com. I'll actually be headed to Bowser Subaru in Pleasant Hills today. We're going to check out some of their new vehicles. They're getting ready as we get deep into fall. Obviously, the year for the car manufacturers turns, and it used to be October was the big display. They would take time. You know, it was a really big deal. I mean, now you hardly notice the difference when the new models come in for the new years because it happens pretty much year-round. But still, October back in the day was when you'd really get the first look at the new models for the new year. So we're going to show you some of those as we'll take a little visit out there today to the power of Bowser. Meantime, Aaron, yesterday I mentioned going in the last half hour to see dermatologist, and just in general, the nurse came in and said, okay, you got to take everything off, put on this paper gown, open in the back.
It's an uncomfortable situation.
Plus, it's chilly in there.
Right. It is true. It's like, this really isn't doing much for me, but okay.
I mean, they're doing what they do.
Right.
Lining them up.
My respect and adoration for dermatologists has reached new heights. I love them.
Well, obviously, they play an important role, but try to get a appointment.
It's rough.
Try to get an appointment with a dentist. Try to get an appointment with
doctor.
Yeah. So there's a big event coming up at the end of next week called Mission of Mercy.
Yes.
At the David Lawrence Convention Center. And it's 2 days where they'll help people that are, you know, challenged to get these kind of services.
Right.
So there's a website, mompgh.org, Mission of Mercy. So think of mompgh.org if you'd like to get some details on that. And coming up, we're anticipating talking to the medical director of the cardiac catheterization lab and interventional cardiology at Westmoreland Hospital, part of Independence Health System. Independence Health System is comprised of 5 hospitals, and it's a relatively new joint venture between the old Butler Health System and Accella in Westmoreland County. And we'll get you details. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Rapid Transit. We used to call it Pat Bus, Port Authority, but last couple of years it's been Pittsburgh Regional Transit. And with us is spokesman Adam Randolph. Adam, haven't talked to you in a while. How you been?
I'm well, Larry. How are you?
You know what? Before we get into the new routes, I wanted to ask you, we had talked to Rich Fitzgerald a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about years in the making, this rapid transit between Oakland and downtown Pittsburgh. When is that going to come online?
So construction began in September, and that's going to construction is going to go downtown for the next roughly 6 months or so, and then we're going to start on the Oakland and Uptown side. It should be complete by 2027.
And then it will be literally a tremendous link between a very vibrant Oakland neighborhood with the universities there present, and then, of course, downtown, that link. So you'll be able to zip right in, right?
Yeah, it's one of our busiest corridors, so we're really hopeful that the connection between the two is going to really create vibrant community in between, but also a faster connection for the folks who are going directly to Oakland or directly to downtown.
Adam, Paul Rasmussen here. I'm curious to know how much the new rapid transit will cut down on the commute time from Oakland to downtown. What's the estimate?
The estimates really vary, and it really depends on where you're getting on and where you're getting off. It could be a few minutes. It could be 5 to 10 minutes. But for us, it's really about the reliability of going between the two. Right now, obviously, buses get stuck in the same traffic that everybody else does, especially when there's an event at the PPG Paints Arena or Peterson Event Center or something like that. Our buses haul more people than ride in private automobiles. So we think it's going to be a really great catalyst for both travel, but also for development.
Absolutely. And applaud that it's finally happening after all these years. All right. That said, we're with Adam Randolph with PRT, Pittsburgh Rapid Transit. And let's talk about some new routes. As more and more people, I guess, there were periods of time, Adam, where during COVID, obviously, the work at home thing, kind of where are we now with people needing a public transportation, and how will these new routes work?
Yeah, So we kicked off what we're calling bus line redesign about a month ago. Ridership has changed so much, so drastically across Allegheny County. Strip district was not a residential community like it was. It wasn't like it was 10 years ago. Right now, we're at 60% of or so of our pre-pandemic ridership, 70% on weekends. But we're really seeing different riding patterns. So we're trying to plan for the Allegheny County that we see today, that we think we're going to see in the future, rather than the existing network, which is really based off of what we saw in 10, 12 years ago.
So right now you're saying about 60% of the regular ridership for what were the normal routes in the past, correct?
That's right. Remote work has really changed the way people are riding, getting around Allegheny County.
So you're going to reconfigure some of those to match, as you pointed out, the Strip District. How about all the access there for people that are living in those condos and townhouses just behind the terminal alone, not to mention the other places?
Yeah, that's just one example of places in Allegheny County where there's more residents. There's probably two dozens of examples where there's residents now where there weren't before, or there's jobs now where there weren't before.
Adam, in terms of other new routes, is there anything besides the Strip District that's a focus area for you?
Yeah, so we're really looking at our entire system with this bus line redesign. We talked to a bunch of people, took all the bus routes off of the map, and really listened to what people had to say, how they're getting around, where they're going, where they want to go. Based off of our current system, they might be going to one grocery store, but they'd prefer to be going to the grocery store that's closest to them. So we really looked at the data, everything that we heard from all the feedback, and answering questions like, where should buses go? Where should they operate? How frequently should they run? And we drew it up. We are now giving folks something to look at, something to comment on. We know that 100% things are going to change, and we expected that. But we're really looking for folks to comment on the draft proposal.
And they can do that online at rideprt.org, correct?
They can do it online at rideprt.org, or even easier,
busline redesign.com. Busline redesign.com. Easy to remember. All right, Adam, thank you for the update.
I appreciate it, Larry.
All right, Adam Brandoff, spokesman for the PRT. So that's easy to remember. So they want your feedback. Next hour, you're going to meet the candidates in our 8 o'clock hour. 8:35, Rob McCurry, who wants to be United States Congressman, 17th Congressional District. He's a Republican. And then we'll talk to Chris DeLuzio, who is the incumbent and wants to keep his seat. Very important local election, and we'll hear what both candidates have to say. Paul, I got to ask you, have you ever been to one of these haunted houses that are so popular these days?
I stopped getting into horror about 30 years ago. I don't know why I stopped going to these things.
That's because you're a newsman and you deal with it every day.
I think that's pretty much it, yeah.
How about this?
That's a good guess.
Police in Nashville can't legally shut down a haunted house so extreme, visitors have to sign a 40-page waiver.
Whoa.
That includes tooth pulling, finger breaking, or head shaving as possibilities. McCamey Manor.
Would you repeat that?
Finger breaking, tooth pulling, and head shaving as possibilities.
Oh, you'll wow. Love
it. It's a subject of a new Hulu documentary. And it's opening again this month. Some visitors claim to have been...
What in waterboarding. The world?
Waterboarding.
Tased. Whipped. Taunted with spiders and trapped in boxes.
Wow.
That's
the people that are running this show are clearly sadists.
You mean that show, not this show.
No, he's talking about
Present
you.
Company excluded. Last hour, we talked to
the
an
tooth
expert.
Pulling part is the one that gets
resources.
That takes me back to that movie
on dealing
with Dustin
Hoffman
and
in the workplace. Marathon Man.
Marathon
Larry
Man.
Larry Richard
the,
with our anchorman,
safe?
Paul Rasmussen.
Yeah,
and we welcome former United States Congressman
teeth
with Chris Carney. Thank represented the
40-page waiver
Pennsylvania district.
That should be a
Congressman,
clue.
Good morning.
Maybe this is something you don't
Good morning,
do.
Larry. How are you?
I'm curious for someone like yourself, wherever you go, people want to talk politics, especially when they realize, oh, former congressman, and then probably share their thoughts with you, right?
Yes. There's a great sort of energy out there to share their points of view, no matter what they might be. And it's, you know, it's interesting to get a sense of how people are thinking about the issues, what they understand, what they don't really understand, and how that kind of affects their behavior. And obviously, in the 2024 election, we're really kind of focused on what that behavior is going to be.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, as you're well aware, we're the keystone state, and in all of the states that they feel are the battleground states, we seem to be the most important, certainly as evidenced by the amount of money they're spending here more than any other state. The candidates have been crisscrossing, as you know, especially here in southwestern Pennsylvania. What makes Pennsylvania so attractive and so important?
Well, it's become a swing state. Obviously, the electoral votes that Pennsylvania offers are critical to both campaigns, both the Trump and the Harris campaigns. And it is, you know, sort of the eastern state of the United States that is sort of evenly divided politically. And it's interesting to watch sort of how things have evolved. And it's a reflection of the sort of the economic forces that are driving people's decisions, the social forces that are driving people's decisions. But, you know, I think it's ultimately a reflection of the fact that, you know, Pennsylvania really is where this all began as a nation. And, you know, we're returning back to it in 2024.
Congressman Carney, this is Paul Rasmussen. I'm curious to know your evaluation of the political demographics of Pennsylvania in recent elections. When you look at the map, which counties voted Democratic and which were carried by Republicans, you can see a clear, you know, wide swath of the state is red except for the cities, the big ones.
Right. Correct. Yeah, and I represented part of that red area up in the northeast and central part of the state. You know, you've heard the phrase, it's Pennsylvania, or it's Pittsburgh in the west, Philadelphia in the east, and Alabama in the middle. You know, those are all sort of ways Pennsylvania has been described for many, many years. And, you know, it's no different this cycle. But it's interesting, when I was elected in 2006 as a Democrat in a very red district, there are issues upon which everybody can agree, and it's a matter of having the ability to have a conversation with folks who maybe don't understand an issue well or want to have more information on an issue, and having the conversation back and forth and understanding where people are, understanding their priorities, their concerns, their fears, their hopes. All those things are critical, and that doesn't matter if you're in a blue area, a blue county, or a red county. Those things really aren't different for people, regardless of your political stripe.
We're with former Congressman Chris Carney. I'm curious then, how do we return to more civility? And obviously that's not going to happen till well after the election, but discourse between the parties in power to get things done? So many things are left undone right now.
Right, and it's very frustrating. As somebody who worked very hard in Congress to accomplish things, it is kind of just marking time, it seems like now. The parties, rather than be cooperative, reach across the aisle, reach across the political divide to find common ground, would rather focus on what separates us. And that doesn't move the ball forward. Obviously, it's horrible for the country. You can have disagreements about policy. You can have disagreements about political philosophy. But one thing you must understand is that both sides, regardless if it's a Democrat or Republican, still love the nation. And you can have a disagreement but still love the United States. You have to understand that there is loyal opposition in the United States. That's what it's based upon. You assume that both sides love the nation, but they disagree with you. That doesn't mean they hate America. We've got to get past this point that if you don't agree with me, you hate the country. Why we've developed that, I'm not sure. Why that has become such a prominent feature in our politics today, I really don't understand. But we have to get past it. We have to understand that you get to disagree in this country. In fact, that's what the framers of the Constitution hoped for. If you only had one point of view, you don't have a democracy. If you only have one point of view, you have an autocracy. We're not that. We're still a democracy.
Chris, in terms of the post-election response of the American public, I spoke with the political science professor not too long ago who said the best thing that can happen is for both sides, no matter who wins and loses, to accept the results of the election without acrimony.
I agree. But unfortunately, we see one side already sort of predetermine what will happen if that side doesn't win. You know, it's threatening violence. I think the word bloodbath was used. You can't have that. I mean, that is what strains the bounds of this nation. The things that tie us together then are kind of cut. And, you know, a democracy is a very, very strong thing if people believe in it. It is not if people don't. And unfortunately, I think we are in one of those elections where people are questioning the strength of the democracy because some people question whether or not it's a legitimate vote. We haven't really had situations like this up until, Donald Trump started to run and sort of presaged what would happen if he didn't come out on top of the vote. So, I mean, it's got to change. And I agree that if both sides would accept the outcome of the election, that would go a long way toward healing whatever sorts of divides we have.
And we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
You bet. Anytime. Take care, guys.
Former Congressman Chris Carney, and we're going to talk to Rob Mercury, who's running for Congress in the 17th Congressional District, and the incumbent Chris DeLuzio. We'll do that within the context of the next 45 minutes and hear what they have to say. We'll let them give their platform pitch, including what's most important to you. Download the free Odyssey app. Take us with you wherever you go. AUDACY will keep you up to date on breaking news, weather information. And coming up, we're going to talk to both candidates for United States Congress representing Pennsylvania's 17th district here in the region. First up will be Rob Mercury, who's been a state rep and trying to win the seat that Chris DeLuzio now has. Interesting, Paul. These two men, very similar.
Easily one of the most competitive races in Pennsylvania.
And I like both men as people. Both are 43, 40 years old. Rob Mercury, Chris DeLuzio, in that order. Both served our country in the military service. Both have young families. Both have a desire to, obviously represent us. And so it's just in this case in particular, it's not so much about the name calling and all of that. It's about who stands where on the big issues that affect southwestern Pennsylvania.
For the most part, that's what's been crossing my email account when I get releases from the two campaigns. They're more issue related. This race reminds me, Larry, a lot of the contest between Connor Lamb and Keith Rothfuss.
Well, that's a good
analogy.
That
was a very, very competitive race in a part of the city, the county, where it's pretty evenly divided. It could have gone either way. In fact, I was living in that district and voted in that district in that particular election, and when I showed up, both candidates were at the precinct.
At the same time.
I was never seen anything quite like that before.
By the way, the county held over the weekend. I happened to be driving past the skating rink at North Park.
They had a party for voting, right?
Yeah, they had. They wanted people who were going to do mail-in balloting. It was almost like an educational thing, but there were practical parts, too, where you could actually vote by mail and deposit your mail-in ballot right there. And some of the candidates were there.
And I think that it's great to see, regardless of, you know, where the effort is coming from to get the vote out. I must have been texted or had a piece of mail reminding me to send in my ballot, because I'm a mail-in ballot guy. I must have had at least a half a dozen in the last week reminders to vote. I've already done that, and from various organizations.
Well, I get the mail-in information, you know, all the postcards and the big mailers, the junk mail.
Man, I got it out of the mailbox yesterday. It took me 20 minutes to go through everything.
Yeah, I have saved it all. I'm bundling it to use it as kindling for the winter.
There's plenty of paper for that.
So in 2 weeks, the election will be underway officially. And here's a little twist I wanted to share with our audience and you. This is no time to experiment with a new autograph. Now, this raised my eyebrows immediately because, A, a lot of young voters don't know how to write in cursive,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they don't have anything to compare it to. But experts are now warning that if your signature has changed over the last 4 years, the state could chuck your ballot. I got to see if this is true.
This is the ballot that goes with the mail-in, right? Where you sign the envelope on the outside,
correct.
Right?
So putting an X on the signature line, I guess, wouldn't work. There are a lot of pressure on states to put extra focus on voter fraud. We understand why. If the signature on your ballot doesn't match your voter registration, will your vote count at all? I got to ask about this, if that's legit. Because
yeah.
Who's comparing
Here's the thing that I'm concerned about. I mean, I guess the signature is an indication that you have actually, you know, filled out a ballot and put it in the envelope. But, you know, in order to qualify to vote in the first place, to register, right, you have to provide proof of identity. That already has to happen. So if you've provided a Pennsylvania driver's license, a social security number, and they're able to verify all of that, and then they have your name and address, and it stayed the same, and they mail a ballot to that name and address, what's the problem? I don't understand that part. And maybe we do. Maybe we have a red herring here. I don't know.
Let's be honest, though. Signatures at this point are almost silly because the electronic ones, people are signing with their finger.
Right.
Nobody's signature looks the same. Who's going to decide that?
Yeah.
The same thing, you know what's really antiquated is Social Security numbers.
Wow.
Why
no
should
kidding, Larry.
Anybody be able to use your number for any reason if they come upon it? Here's an example. When you get a check in the mail from whoever,
mm-hmm.
you sign it on the back, and sometimes you put your account number for deposit, especially if you're depositing it mobile.
Yeah, I see FDO, or deposit only.
Yeah, but if you put what account you want it to go in,
mm-hmm.
which you can do online.
Well, I do that with my cell phone. I just take a picture of the check and send it in.
Put their account numbers on the back of checks.
Sure.
And all these other things, like if you send a check to the IRS, you got to put your Social Security number on that check. My point is signatures, hand signatures, and Social Security numbers are in terms of really establishing anything at this point, seem to be obsolete.
I agree with you, especially on the Social Security, because they're so unsecure now.
I mean, there's no security.
I mean, there's my Social Security number and probably a vast number of people's are available on the dark web.
Yeah, I bought yours online last week. Just don't know what to do with it.
Go on a shopping spree or what?
No. This is the Big K Morning Show. I'm Larry Richert, and in the next half hour plus, you're going to meet both candidates for United States Congress, the 17th Congressional District. And first, Republican Rob McCurry, who's been a state rep since 2020. Rob, good to see you on our video at kdkradio.com. You can watch us now on the stream. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Doing well. I'm looking at both of your backgrounds, Chris DeLuzio and you, and first and foremost, we thank you for your military service. You're pretty similar in age. You 43, he's 40. You went to West Point, two tours in Iraq. You received the Bronze Star as a captain for your service, and we thank you for that.
Thanks, Larry.
Really important because I have the tremendous amount of respect for the men and women who have served. That said, you now want to take on Chris DeLuzio for United States Congress. What was your genesis? What, you know, why do you want to do this?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Larry. And, you know, first of all, I appreciate your comments about service. It's an important part of my past. And, you know, Kelsey and I just had a chance to go see my classmates on our 20-year West Point reunion. You know, we lost 14 classmates overseas in the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts. And several more since then from post-traumatic stress. So I want to honor them this morning. You know, what we're doing in stepping forward and running for Congress is a continuation of service. It is a desire to continue to give back to this great country and to represent our community well, and also really to prepare the future for our kids and for the people of this region. We have big challenges in this country, Larry. We know them. You know, we all are hearing about these challenges every day on the TV and on radio. And we need leaders to step up and design solutions and work across the aisle so that we can build a future that we're all proud of.
What is the most important issue for southwestern Pennsylvania? I think most people would say the economy, finance, money. And from your perspective, is that it, the economy?
It is. So I'll make it more personal, though. It's jobs. It's good-paying, family-sustaining jobs for each and every person and family in this region. We've been on a decline in Western PA for far too long, and it's directly due to the policy choices that we've been making in Western PA. You know, we have a county executive who just proposed a 47% property tax increase, which is devastating to working families and seniors in this region. And we have, you know, a congressman, Chris DeLuzio, who has voted against our own energy interests in Western PA, against natural gas, clean natural gas, by the way, that as we produce it, creates more jobs and helps with our environmental challenges by being one of the most cleanest, reliable sources that we have. And it's abundant here in Western PA. And so I don't get the policy position of blocking exports of natural gas. You know, additionally, voting to keep the border open rather than secure it so that we have a safer community. These are the types of challenges that I would contrast my plan with his record. But unfortunately, he's continued to duck debates. Larry, I'm glad to hear that. You know, we're both going to be on your program this morning, but I would ask voters to listen carefully and choose wisely. We all need to stand up and be counted in this moment because the future depends on it. And I look forward to representing this area in Congress and fighting for our future.
For the record, the Allegheny County Council shot down Sarah Anna Morano's budget proposal. So it doesn't look like that increase will happen, but yes, she did propose that. Meanwhile, we hear so much about the border, and so much about the border is unclear for us here in Western Pennsylvania, except that we do know there are illegal aliens, and that's where it just gets so shaded and gray. I don't think the average person here really knows the full breadth. I mean, the amount of misinformation, and it's one of the hot topics for the presidential campaign. What can a United States congressperson do to change that?
Yeah, well, I started during my campaign by going and visiting the border to make sure that I fully understood this issue. And it seems far away for Western Pennsylvanians, but let me be clear, this is an issue of security, and we directly are impacted by the drugs that are coming up through the border with Mexico constantly every day, and also the dependency on the government system that is created by illegals who come through, because they do receive government assistance and protection and benefits while they work their way through the court system. And it's not just one or two people. It is 10 plus million people during the last 4 years, which is a national tragedy. It's bad for these folks who are coming through from a humanitarian standpoint as well. And it's just something we need to clean up. You know, there's there was a bill that was proposed, which made some progress on this, but it wasn't good enough. It allowed 5,000 additional folks every single day to cross over the border. And that's not where we need to be. We need to secure the border so that we have fewer drugs in this country and fewer illegals. My opponent also voted to allow or to, he voted against a measure to force citizenship ID at the polls. This, again, puzzles me, and I don't understand why somebody who is well-educated would want to allow any question about legitimacy at the polls, including citizenship. And so I would pose that to my opponent to make sure that we understand his position on it. You know, Larry, he's a part of the Progressive Caucus in Congress, which is the furthest left led by AOC and participated in by Summer Lee. And so those are the types of policies that will continue under Chris DeLuzio. I, on the other hand, have committed to being a part of the moderate Problem Solvers Caucus. This is a caucus whose goal is to work across the aisle and get things done. And that's the kind of congressman that I would be. You know, I'm a Pittsburgh moderate, Larry. I want the Steelers to win and I want America to win. And that's what I'll do.
Rob Bucuri, a Republican candidate for United States Congress. Appreciate your time this morning. And we'll hear from Chris DeLuzio right after the news at the top of the hour. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Larry. God bless.
Rasmussen at the top of this hour. You'll meet United States Congressman Chris DeLuzio, who wants to keep his job representing the 17th Congressional District. And Aaron, looking at the map, the 17th Congressional District is pretty broad swath. I mean, it's all of Beaver County, Allegheny County, not all, but all the towns that are associated with it. So it's basically everything in Allegheny County, but the city of Pittsburgh imparts to the south and east. You see, you probably can't see the map from here.
Well, I loved watching you look at the map. I'm like, he's breaking it down for me.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's really important job for us.
Yeah, it is.
But obviously, presidential campaign, number one, the biggest.
Right.
The other would be United States Senator Bob Casey trying to keep his seat.
Right.
Dave McCormick trying to take it.
Yep.
Really important when you look at the Republicans.
Good morning.
And Democrats.
I'm Larry Richard, host of the Big K Morning Show.
And power.
In the past half hour, we talked to Rob Bucuri, who's a state rep.
It's interesting.
Wanting
you know,
to
people,
become a United
I'm sure,
States
ask
Congressman.
You, they ask me, what's it like being
the Republican
in the
Party?
Of
and
of course,
the incumbent
it's intense.
Is Congressman
we don't really
Chris
unplug,
DeLuzio,
but it's also
Thornburg
cool
native,
to
Iraq
hear
veteran,
and have separate conversations
attorney,
with them
graduated
about
from the
what
US
they're
Naval
trying
Academy
to cross forward and literally
and served our
be a
country proudly.
To both.
You know what the number
and
one question I've had
we
in the last
first and foremost your military
hours.
Service, Chris. Thank you. What? I
thank
get text.
You,
I just got
on.
Another one.
Hey, Larry.
And your
did you meet Donald Trump at the Steelers
about
game?
The same age. You're
40,
which, he's 43.
Understandably, they're
you're
like,
the
oh, for sure.
Though.
He had to have met.
Down the hall, they had this since 2023.
You were in your little cubby.
You don't think
say,
they would let us near.
Why do you have to run important. Since you've
that special
in
glass.
The little short over a year and a half, right?
I did not.
Well, I think the framers of our Constitution got this right. You got to be close to the people, and every 2 years means you got to make the case, and that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm asking folks for their votes again to represent us down there. And look, Washington is a it's a messy place, but I take the values I learned up, or I learned growing up around here, around hard work and love of this country and sacrifice. And despite the chaos down there, my team and I have gotten a heck of a lot done. More than 2,000 constituent cases, helping get more than $5 million back to folks that they were owed from our government. We've seen more than $2 billion of federal money come to this district since I've been the congressman. That's for things, everything from getting lead out of our water pipes, getting the Parkway East repaired, development on the riverfront in Sharpsburg. I could go on and on about funding law enforcement, getting upgrades to fire stations and all the rest. That's the job, but it's more than that. Frankly, it's to represent all of us, to fight for our safety. That's exactly what I've been doing with my efforts on rail safety. It is a real honor to represent Western Pennsylvania, and I'm hoping folks will let me earn their votes this time again and send me back for two more years.
A lot of those issues, very important, but they're not what gets the headlines most of the time, as you're aware. The big headline is, what is the most important single issue in Western Pennsylvania? And it seems like most people are talking about the economy.
I think folks want to be able to afford their lives. They want to have solid jobs. They want to have an economy that rewards hard work, right? You play by the rules, you work hard, you can afford your life, retire with dignity. They're tired of getting ripped off, frankly, by a lot of this corporate price gouging. And I hear it from small business owners. I hear it from folks complaining about the prices they see on things. I hear it from farmers. And you got to be willing to take on the big, powerful corporations that are ripping us off. You know, I was with some farmers a few months back, hearing from them about how hard it is to get their meat into the processors. And any folks who know that industry know that there's a lot of consolidation, a lot of market power. And we got to have a government willing to stand up to some, to groups like meat processors. That's how you can bring down costs for folks. We got to be investing in jobs here at home. And let me make a pretty clear point about something. When it's something as straightforward as even rail safety, which folks know I'm leading on down in Washington, there are powerful corporate lobbying forces that don't want change, that want to put profits ahead of our safety. Those are the folks bankrolling my Republican right-wing opponent. I mean, the very first endorsement he really put out there was from the powerful groups trying to kill my rail safety legislation. You know, I'm fighting for us, not those guys, and I'm going to continue fighting for us for as long as it takes.
We're with Congressman Chris DeLuzio. Rob McCurry said you voted against an energy bill that would allow us to help extract the natural gas that we have here, or at least inhibit it in a way. How do you respond?
Yeah, I don't think he really understands how the Congress works or what these bills really are. I mean, I just was part of a letter, actually, with plenty of colleagues expressing alarm about our ability to export LNG to stand up for our allies in Ukraine, for instance. You talk to the workers whose actual jobs rely on the energy industry across the board. I have every labor endorsement in this region, all the building trades, you name it. That tells you who's standing up for our industry and our jobs around here and our energy future and our energy security going forward. I'm not bankrolled by corporate PACs. I don't take corporate money. My opponent does. That's who he's going to stand up for. That's not what I'm doing.
And what about the border? I know this issue in some ways is so overwhelming to so many. And since sometimes here in southwestern Pennsylvania, we don't have as direct an issue as some of the border states for obvious reasons. Yet Donald Trump and the Republicans saying we're being overrun. You're in Congress. What do you hear? Mm-hmm. What's going on? How do we stop it? So something has to be done.
No doubt, Larry. And we had a bill that should have gotten a vote and should have become law. It was a pretty tough but fair compromise. I wrote an op-ed in the Trib about my support of it. This was negotiated by one of the most conservative Republicans in the Senate with President Biden and his administration. And do you know why it failed? It failed because Donald Trump told congressional Republicans he wanted to campaign on this. He did not want a bill to pass to make things better at the border. That is the kind of naked self-interest, putting your own goals ahead of this country that I can't stand. I can't stomach it. And so I've been part of the solution, working with Democrats and Republicans to actually pass immigration reform and border safety measures. And yet we see these ultra-right folks willing to put their own quest for power ahead of doing things that this country needs. It's very disappointing.
Radio KDKA, Larry Richard with United States Congressman Chris DeLuzio. Congressman, I'm glad we reestablished contact. Wanted to give you a chance to answer the question about voter ID. Where do you stand?
Yeah, look, I think, and I say this as someone who not just served in uniform, but I worked on election security in my time before Congress. There are a lot of common sense things we can do around protecting our elections. Certainly verifying who folks are when they go to register is a big part of that. Paper ballots, which we now have in Pennsylvania, has been a huge improvement for election security. But I often say this too, and this is broader than any single policy change. You know, we can't legislate what's in the heart of candidates, what's in their souls. And when folks like Donald Trump lie about losing elections, when they cast doubt on our democracy, it does more to weaken faith in our self-government than anything else. And I think we have to reject that across party lines. I've been so disappointed by the unwillingness of so many Republican politicians. I want to be clear, politicians, not the voters or people, politicians who refuse to condemn that kind of election denial. And, you know, we've seen election deniers and fake electors running all around this country being welcomed, frankly, by my right-wing opponent into his campaign. That's dangerous stuff. And I think there are good patriots across the political spectrum here in Western Pennsylvania, all over the country, who want our democracy to succeed and don't want to see these attacks.
That said, Congressman, why would it be a problem to ask voters to prove citizenship?
Well, you have to do that to register. You know, folks in this country, when you go to register to vote, you've got a test under penalty of perjury. You are who you are. You've got to show that. You know, that's not something that isn't already required by the law. And yet I've had to step up with a bunch of my Democratic colleagues to protect the right to vote of our service members abroad, who are now being attacked in the courts by several Republican members of Congress, all of whom, by the way, voted against certifying the 2020 election, attacking the right to vote of service members abroad. I really can't believe this is a place I'm seeing the far right of the Republican Party go to go after the right to vote of our service members and their families overseas. And yet here we are. And I bring that up not because these threats aren't real. They are. But I think we have to show with a clear voice across the parties that this is beyond the pale. We shouldn't be attacking the right to vote of those who are wearing our uniform overseas.
With all the divisiveness, you sure you want to keep this job?
You know, Larry, I'll tell you, I serve on the Armed Services Committee. I serve on the Transportation Infrastructure Committee. These are real working committees. We get a lot done. One of the caucuses that I am most proud of is the Four Country Caucus that is veterans in both parties, Democrats, Republicans. That's a group that we really punch above our weight. We get a lot done. We focus on national security and defense issues. But even when I was going to lead rail safety in the House, I looked to one of my Republican counterparts there, a fellow Naval Academy graduate, to now lead that bill with me in the House. We need that down in Washington. We need folks who understand that the bonds of country are stronger than our partisan ones. We're not going to agree on everything. Believe me, we don't. But where we can, we ought to work together. And it shows, I think, not just in the work down there, but the coalition that I've put together to, frankly, win re-election, right? Labor across the board. Fraternal Order of Police, the district attorney in Beaver County, Governor Shapiro, you name it. Those are folks who understand we have to work together to do the right things for this country and for Western Pennsylvania.
United States Congressman Chris DeLuzio, representing the 17th Congressional District. Appreciate your time this morning, and good luck 2 weeks till the election. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Get out there and vote, folks.
Get out and vote. Oh, little Stevie. Stevie Wonder, 2 weeks ago tonight, he started his 10-city tour at PPG Paints Arena. I understand Pat Septak was there from our newsroom, said it was a great show. Every Tuesday, we check in with our colleague Lynn Hayes Freeland, and Lynn is on our V-Mix, we call it. You can see Lynn on the radio at kdkradio.com on our live stream. Lynn, you look like you're home.
I'm not.
What?
I am not back in my house.
I noticed a different background.
It is a different background, but no, I'm not in my house yet. But I can say that work began yesterday on my house. So I am moving in the right direction, Larry.
Yeah, for those that don't know, this is due to the first of the two hurricanes, Helene, that affected the South. Milton just affected Florida. and you've had flooding issues and you're still not home. I can't believe that.
Well, you know, part of it was a delay on our part because we wanted to get several different estimates. You know, there was so much damage done. It was my instinct that some of those estimates were coming in a little higher than they needed to be. So we were feeling our way to try to get a good estimate that felt right and felt like it made sense. And then you have to get on their schedule because they have so much work to do. But as I said, they came yesterday and they took out all the old duct work. So we're moving in the right direction.
All right. What's on your mind 2 weeks to Election Day? I know. Here we go. We just talked to a couple of congressmen and one who wants to be.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Larry, two things came to mind. Number one, I was in Pittsburgh again, and I can say in all honesty, the political advertising in Pittsburgh is greater than it is anywhere else I've ever seen it. It is unreal how many political ads run within the body of a one-hour news show or a half-hour news show. The other thing I'll say is I'm glad you actually interviewed some other candidates because there's more on this ballot than just the presidential race. And I don't know if everyone puts together how this all fits together.
Yeah, really important because in this congressional seat, it's all of Beaver County and a great chunk of Allegheny County. And this is where we live. These are the people that directly represent our interests, we hope, in this case, in Washington.
Absolutely. And, you know, the realities are a president can only do so much. I mean, there's a reason why there's a Congress and a Senate so we can have a checks and balance system. So who else you vote for down ticket makes a difference. And I've heard so many people say, well, I'm just going to vote for president and that's it. No, you got to vote for all of them. You got to go all the way down that ticket, down that ballot and make a choice and make an informed choice, not based on what you read on social media.
Yeah. How many people, I wonder, actually do any real research on the candidates, in this case, below the two presidential candidates who we all seem to know so well?
Yeah, and I think that's tough. I mean, I certainly appreciate that sentiment, but here's the challenge, I think. Those of us who have grew up in our generation, you want to do some research, you Google it. But now the problem is half of what you Google isn't true. So you really have to dig deep to find out the real facts. You know, a lot of sites are now doing what they call fact checking on some of the things these candidates say, but it's not easy to find out what's the real story or the truth.
So as we get to Election Day between here and there, usually there's an October surprise. Maybe the only one was Donald Trump cooking French fries over the weekend, which got a lot of social media, and it was like a reality show when he was serving it up in the drive-thru.
Well, and you know what, Larry, that one really kind of threw me for a loop. I thought initially he had just dropped by a random McDonald's and went into the kitchen. I don't know why I thought that, but that was all prearranged. Even the folks driving through the drive-through window were prearranged. So at some point it becomes, well, this is really almost like political stunt than anything else because nothing about it was natural or organic, as they say.
Did you hear what he said about Arnold Palmer at the Arnold Palmer Airport?
You know, I did, Larry, and I got to tell you, I heard it while I was in church on Sunday morning. Someone said to me, did you hear what Donald Trump said last night?
Wait a minute.
And I said, yeah, you heard me right.
While you were in church. All right, we're going to hold on that thought. More to come with Lynn Hayes Freeland Mardi Griffin, and we'll check in with him in just a moment. We reconnect with Lynn Hayes Freeland. So, Lynn, as you're working your way through this Tuesday morning, what's on your top of mind?
Well, let me circle back, Larry, because I said that I heard about the former president's remarks in church on Sunday, and I feel like that was misleading in some way, so I feel like I need to put that in context.
Okay, go ahead.
So I ran into an old friend, and, you know, people would just kind of look at me still as a person very involved in the news. and asked me, you know, did I hear about the genitalia comment? And I said, I did not. But then that piqued my curiosity. So I literally had to go outside the building, pull it up on my phone so I could read it. Somehow or another, it just didn't feel appropriate to pull that up in church. So I had to go outside, and that was how I first became aware of it. So it's not as if that was something talked about in the sermon or anything like that. It was a passing comment from a friend that really piqued my curiosity. I feel like I just had to say that.
Well, it was fodder for the talk show. You know, the late night shows, as you can imagine.
Wow.
And it was probably happened too late. I don't know if Saturday Night Live addressed it, but they opened with Michael Keaton, by the way. Michael Keaton was the special guest, Pittsburgh's own.
Yeah, I noticed that. And I got to tell you, I always watch the cold opening on Saturday Night Live. I just think the portrayal of the candidates, of the vice president, of the former president, I just think they're spot on. Now, I'll be honest, I don't watch the whole show, but I do usually watch that opening skit. And they've really been quite funny. They've been right on point.
Yeah, well,
but I think it was too close for that one. So probably next Saturday.
They got to find a way to work it in. Meanwhile, many people have already voted. Millions, as a matter of fact, around the country.
Millions around the country. You know, this was my first experience with early voting. You know, in Pennsylvania, you could have a mail-in ballot. You could take a ballot and drop it off. But literally in Georgia, you can go to a polling place within your county, and it can be any polling place, and vote. So that was a new experience for me. I was kind of looking forward to it because I didn't know how crowded it was going to be on November 5th. But I got to tell you, there were, in some of the polling places, there were long lines. I mean, people really take advantage of that early voting. And in fact, I know Georgia broke records for a couple of days in terms of the turnout. But what we don't know is who people are voting for. You know, a lot of people make assumptions about that. We do know that there was a big Republican registration before the deadline, which was a little bit earlier in Georgia than it was here. But the realities are, you don't know who people are voting for. You just know they're going early to vote.
And hard to get a sense of that because I think a lot of people are holding it close to the vest. Either way, don't you?
I do. And, you know, even with the pollsters, I'm not sure that people are honest. I had put on my news radio Facebook page a couple of weeks ago, you know, have you ever been called in a poll? You know, they talk about all these polls. I've never been called. Now, it turns out there were several people that responded and said they, in fact, had been contacted to be polled. Most of them, however, declined to comment. Some folks said they hung up. They just didn't want to get involved in that process. So it also then just makes me a little more skeptical, which I've been since the Hillary Trump race, the first go round. I've just been skeptical about polling.
You know, this race in particular, I've gotten more texts from the parties asking, who are you voting for? Like, and then I actually got some follow-up texts saying, you didn't tell us who you're voting for yet. I'm like, who is this? I delete them or put stop. You know, it says if you don't want to get these anymore, text stop.
Right.
Like, I'm not telling people.
Absolutely. And I'll be honest, I had no idea that I knew so many celebrities. You know, so many celebrities are sending me text messages these days. Who knew that I knew all these people in Hollywood? The other day, even in snail mail, I had 9 pieces of election material in the mail. I just feel like it's you are being bombarded. And if some people opt to sit out just because of that, I understand that. I'm not endorsing that. I'm not encouraging that. But I understand how people could check out because the hits come from all over.
All right. What are we going to do after the election, Lynn? What are we going to talk about?
Well, you know, well, here's the thing, Larry. We don't even know how soon we're going to know the results of the election. You know, those days of knowing the result at 2 a.m. the next day, I think they're long gone. I think it's going to be a couple of days until we know the results of this election, and then that we'll have to dissect it. So we've got a couple more weeks to get out of this.
Well, keep in mind, 4 years ago, until January 6th, where the Congress was gathered to make it official, it was technically up in the air.
Well, I think that's a matter of perspective, but yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, until...
You're just saying.
Till the vice president...
Yeah, no, you're right.
Here's what's interesting. So that's the vice president's job on that day, right? is
two. That's correct.
Well, what happens? Who's the vice president now?
Well, you know, I never thought about that, but you're right. Kamala is the current vice president, and she would be the one. She would still be the vice president come January. Little, that is an interesting
little drama. Yeah. Add to the
there
drama.
There you go, stirring it up, Larry. Stirring it up, Larry.
All right. Lynn, we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Talk to you next week. Okay, bye-bye.
Lynn Hayes Freeland on the Big K Morning Show, and we're going to check in with Marty Griffin next. Coming up, 10 until 2, Marty Griffin. Get Marty.
So, this morning, I work out, as you can tell by my body.
Yeah.
I'm what you call cut.
Mm.
This morning, I'm coming up from downstairs. I have a super gym in the basement, as you can tell by my body. And I hear someone, my wife talking to someone. Oh, how's it? Oh, you're so wonderful. You know who she's talking to? The damn dog.
Rosie.
In my house, if given the choice, brother, dog or daddy, I'm outside. There's no question, bro. Patrick has like 9 of those little rat dogs, you know, the ones that bite your nose off.
What do you have, Patrick?
I have 2 long-haired chihuahuas.
Ugly.
Oh, chihuahua.
They're the meanest dogs on earth.
I will say this. My grandmother had a chihuahua named Mickey, and she asked my dad to put it out once, and my dad reached out, oh, Mickey, and it locked onto his hand.
Oh, yeah. His wife wants him to get another one. And if he doesn't, he's out.
Are they angry?
No. Mine are actually very sweet.
Hey, I've been around. First of all, they crap everywhere. They bite your ankles. You know, he's one of those people that his dogs are wonderful until you go in the house and they're biting your ankles.
Well, so they only like certain people.
Uh-huh. That's what it is. One of those dog owners. So what's more important in the lives of all these women out there, their husbands or their dogs, Larry?
Well, then they should go to Pet Fest 24.
Larry.
You coming?
Really? Larry, don't start me. I'll be in some management meeting getting chewed out.
Marty, we need to discuss with
you. I love Pet Fest, Lawrence.
Okay.
But if you need Marty there, just tell Christine about it.
Tomorrow. She'll be here tomorrow.
Oh.
Christine.
I'll Battle the Billionaires.
I'll bring it up.
We had Cuban on yesterday. Now we got Musk. These are rich guys with too much free time. One of them's nuts, and the other one isn't. Which one is it?
What time is Musk on?
We can't get him. He's on another planet. Which one's nuts, and which one's nice, Larry? You got to pick the burger, right? What I find amazing about politics is I interviewed Cuban yesterday, and we're going to play some of it again today. And now he's a jag off because he's supporting. He goes from billionaire Pittsburgher. Everybody wants to buy the Pirates, right? They love Mark.
Oh, yeah.
Now he's a jag off and a loser and an A-bomb and an F-bomb, honestly. And I suck and he sucks. I don't listen to rich guys. I'm glad I've now been put in the class of Mark Cuban in terms of wealth.
Yes, good point.
How you doing?
Coming up.
How you doing?